Mike, spring is upon us. It's finally April, and you know what that means.
National Park Week is here. Every April, the outdoors community celebrates National Park Week. And if you're making your way to some national parks this spring, then be sure to pack a moon travel guide with you.
We all know how time-consuming it is to research everything involved with planning a trip to a national park, from hiking trails to permits to campsites to accommodation. There's so much involved.
Don't spend months endlessly searching, trying to build the perfect trip, when you can do it all with Moon Travel Guides.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical and sustainable travel. They are committed to the national parks and ensure that all of their guides are up to date with the most recent and most helpful information for travelers.
And if you find yourself headed to Wyoming, then be sure to include the newest, most updated edition of the Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton, Hiking, Camping, and Wildlife. In this guide, outdoor expert Becky Lomax takes you through everything you need to see, know, and understand about these two neighboring parks.
From trip planning, the best spot and times for geyser sightings, food recommendations, lodging, the best trail information for hiking trails, updated maps. This Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton has you covered.
For more information and to purchase the Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton, be sure to visit moon.com.
Let your heart be your compass. Let Moon be your guide.
All right, so we need to talk about what I would argue is the queen of national park fiction, literature.
Madame Nevada Barr.
Nevada Barr.
Yes. She does write quite a lot of fiction that is centered on and inside of national parks.
It's true. She herself was a ranger at some point, and she has a lot of insight based off of her time doing that and her main character, her Indiana Jones, her Jack Ryan, if you will, Anna Pigeon.
Anna Pigeon. Such a good name.
Is doing the damn detective work. It's like a Scooby-Doo mystery in the national parks.
Certainly is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It always is. And prior to going to the park we are in now, as of this episode, which is Carlsbad Cavern.
That's right.
Our dear friend Becky said, you got to read Blind Descent.
Yeah. And you should also be reading some Nevada Barr just in general. I think her first book is Track the Cat, which actually takes place in Guadalupe Mountains National Park.
That's right.
I don't know where this falls in her chronology of Anna Pigeon novels, but we were both, I think Becky actually sent us a copy each.
Yes, she did.
And she's like, you got to read this before we go. And I think I might have started it, but I didn't get a chance to fully immerse myself into it until we got back. And it's fascinating because it talks about a section of the park which is not accessible to everyday visitors. The book takes place in a cave that's on the Carlsbad property, but not an accessible cave
to the public. It's close to the public.
It's called Lechuguilla
Cavern
or cave. And Anna Pigeon is sent in on like a rescue mission that turns deadly.
But you know what? It's what we want. Because at that point, we read Blind Descent after we went to Carlsbad.
Right.
Because she, I'm pretty sure, bought us both copies of Blind Descent while in the gift store.
That's right. She's like, okay, you have to read this now.
And it was so much fun having gone there. And having these things to fill your imaginations in.
There is a part of the book that like takes place in the big room, which we'll get to in another episode. Mm-hmm. But most of it is centered around this not accessible cave system that's on the property. But I have to say, I love to read, and not that Dusty doesn't, but I really enjoy books like this where it's not historical fiction, but it's like fiction based off of a well-known space.
Like fiction based off of a place you can actually go.
Exactly.
Which is always fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I remember going backpacking in Italy and being in Rome and having just read Angels and Demons.
Right.
And I was like, oh, all these different places that are mentioned in the book. You know what I mean?
So you were hoping that Ewan McGregor was going to become that next Pope.
I'm hoping for Ewan McGregor to be around the corner every day. Like when I stroll down to the bodega, I'm really hoping I'm going to see
run Ewan into McGregor Obi-Wan
in there and we're going to have our meet cute finally. But Blind Descent was such a fun read and such like an immersive read. And Nevada Bar is very good at, you know,
grabbing your attention.
Grabbing your attention. I mean, it's like so, the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
And that's why it's fun.
And it's a mystery.
Yes.
And it's winky and fun.
And this is not a sponsor. Like Nevada Bar is not sponsoring this episode, nor is the publishing company.
No.
We have not been asked to talk about this. We are merely talking about this because we are fans.
Right. And I think having done the tour that we're going to talk about today, I feel like I wish I had read the book prior to, because there's definitely sometimes a little bit of a similar feel.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park. At the national park. At the national park. Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land, also known as Carlsbad Cavern National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Mescalero Apache and the Lipan Apache.
So let's set the scene here a little bit.
Scene in.
Fade in to Mike, Dusty, and our friend Becky Lomax together, Carlsbad, New Mexico.
That's right.
We were staying here because this was a trip that included Guadalupe Mountains, Carlsbad Cavern, White Sands, and later
Saguaro,
because we went into Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And this was our second day.
Mm-hmm. We sang Show Yourself and cried on the way to Tucson.
Oh, that is true. But that's for a later show. That is for a later episode that you won't get until next season. Mm-hmm. But we did do that. We did. God, that was good. I was like,
that song
I did.
Deep.
I literally at the
Pixar was like, we're going to cut you deep.
Yeah, that was Disney.
Oh, Disney.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally turned to you at the end of the song and I was like, boy, why are you crying?
Oh,
right?
Gosh.
And you were weeping.
That song eats at me.
I know.
Because you are the one you've been waiting for all of your life.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Emotions.
I know.
I'm feeling them now.
We're sidebarring about Show Yourself right now. We're leaning in. There is a fantastic documentary about the making of Frozen 2.
We've talked about it before.
On Disney Plus. And it is so great to watch all of the writers come together and like just have all of the creative arguments about like, what is this thing? What are they doing? What is Otto Holland? Where is she going? Like, is it a place? Mm-hmm. Is it like a physical place, or is it just like a state of mind? Like, what is it, you know? And they had written Show Yourself ahead of figuring out a lot of that.
Mm.
And then there's this moment where the director, she comes in and she's like, I think what we need is like an I'm home song.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lopez's, the songwriters, they're like, listen, we can write you a boring I'm home song if you want, for sure. But this song is really, really it. And is really touching on something really like
deep
and granular
profound.
And like, I think maybe if we retool it a little bit, because at the time it was a little more upbeat and a little more like driving and dramatic rather than like reflective and like, you know, a personal deep dive.
Yeah, like an interpersonal sort of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, anyway, God, we do love that song.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, back into the story.
Back into where we are.
So we had stayed in Carlsbad, and our time in Carlsbad, New Mexico, the town of Carlsbad, was kind of sandwiched in that the day prior to this day, of which we did a lot in Carlsbad Cavern, was our middle day. The first day of our trip, if you'd listened to our episodes 134 and 135 about Guadalupe Peak and Manzanita and Smith Spring, that was our first day of our travels.
So essentially that was yesterday.
Yeah.
And now today we're here at Carlsbad.
Mm-hmm.
And as per usual, Carlsbad Cavern was not that far from where we were staying in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
No.
A quick drive. And it was so...
Past White City.
Right. We had to pass White City again mm-hmm. to go to Carlsbad mm-hmm. Cavern?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
It was not far after.
Got it. So, of course, we get there early. We had a reservation to do a tour very early in the morning. So right. we arrived at 7:55, and yeah. it was good that we arrived then because the parking lot was almost already full.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a long line of people waiting to get inside.
This is a World Heritage Site, everybody. And yeah. it very well should be.
Oh, for sure.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And so we literally like parked, jumped out of the car and got in line right away. When the doors opened shortly after, Becky went in to get in line to, you know, confirm reservations and things like that. And we explored the gift store and the and got, you know, our patches. The
well,
first round.
Our first round anyway.
That's right.
Yeah.
More on this later.
Mm-hmm. Then we basically had a very quickly meet up with our tour group. We had some time to wander through the museum display. And this is an incredible museum space. And as an interpretive space to go over the cavern, to also show you a map, like a three-dimensional map of the cavern, it's a great space as an interp before you do anything. Because Carlsbad can be visited in a number of ways. Are there trails above the surface? Yes. But is that the main draw? No, obviously. Most of the draw is going into the cave. And the cave can be accessed in a number of ways. We were on a tour this day. We were doing a lot of other things after the tour. But one could walk down into the cave through the natural entrance, which we also did. One could also ride the elevator down into the big room and explore the cave in that way. So the thing I really love about Carlsbad is that it is accessible from a lot of different angles.
That's true.
And the museum space, especially if you're someone that maybe is a little claustrophobic, not into caves, but like it is a great museum space. There's things that you can kind of crawl through to like mimic what the cave would be like in tighter sections. It just was, I thought it was very well done. So we,
I agree. Very well mm-hmm. done. What an incredible interpretive area.
Mm-hmm.
And as a fan of museums, we loved this
oh,
one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right in the center of it is this 3D diorama mm-hmm. of all of Carlsbad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people learn differently and people take in information differently. And I have to say, like, they've done a great job of helping everybody try to understand what it is you're going into when you go into this cave.
Yeah.
There's a 3D diorama. There's also, like, images from all over the different place on the walls. They've got maps. They've got everything that can help you understand your own context in the space.
Yep.
Which we had not been in the space at all. And so therefore we were just looking at it curious and also kind of looking at it going like, don't really know what any of this means yet. But soon we were to find out.
Right. We ended up meeting at the 3D diorama. That was where the tour at the front desk told everybody that was on this tour of the lower cave, which is where we were headed, to meet. And we met our tour guide, Jake, who shared that Carlsbad Caverns is not like most caves, which are formed by carbonic acid. Carlsbad is a sulfuric acid-formed cave. It should also be noted that Jake is as tall, if not taller, than us and a caver.
That's right.
Which was like, oh, okay. Having been in, this is our third cave of the national park system. Caves can be very tight to move
oh,
through.
For sure.
And height is often a detriment to caving or that's it, right. It can be. So,
it can be, depending on where you're going. Mm-hmm. And so what we did know about the slower cave tour is that this was not like a beginner level caving tour.
No.
It wasn't like an advanced level caving tour by any means.
We weren't crawling around.
Well, I'd argue differently on that with some of the scrambling that happened at the end.
I mean, maybe you were crawling, but I wasn't. We were scrambling, but not. I wouldn't say I was on my hands and knees.
No, we weren't crawling through, like, you know, chutes or anything like that. But there was some scrambling at the end.
There was.
So in order to get started, we head into Theater 2. It's a multi-purpose room. And in this room, there's chairs, gear, whiteboards. And on one whiteboard had the tour schedule, mm-hmm. and it was a 3-hour tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it broke down the timeline of the tour. And then the other whiteboard had images of the rope and the ladders that we would be
descending down.
Yeah. And it was illustrated on the whiteboard.
Right.
And then there's another ranger who is going to be leading the back of the tour the entire time. This ranger was named Adair.
Yes. So there was accountability. And that was something that they talk about in caving and, like, really making sure that there's safety and accountability. Because if someone was to get injured or have an issue within the cave, that means one ranger can stay with the group or that person while the other ranger leads the rest of the group out or goes for help. Like, that's a very important part of caving, and to do this at Carlsbad, it was something that the NPS had set up as a way to ensure that.
Here they chat with us a little bit about what we're about to head into, allay any fears, answer any questions, and then they're like, all right, it's time to get geared up. So that included hard hats that had headlamps on them, mm-hmm. very important.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important to keep the headlamps lowered so that we didn't shine them in other people's
eyes. They were adjustable headlamps, so you could point them down towards the floor, essentially.
And then the other important thing was gloves.
Yeah.
So they had gloves of varying sizes that we were able to have.
Yes.
And put on.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we were geared up, we headed down.
So we walked back out of Theater 2 and into the visitor center and went to the elevator, and it took us down to the lunchroom at the cave level. So this was fascinating because it drops you in this space that feels like the 1960s were the last thing that happened on Earth, and this is a space frozen in time. It was weird.
It felt like modern for 1960.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, oh.
It was like, this is the creation of, like, the Jetsons, or the set from the Jetsons film, or something like that.
What's that movie with Brendan Fraser and Christopher Walken and Alicia Silverstone's in it? And
Blast from the Past.
It felt like Blast from the Past.
Look at that.
It did. It had that sort of vibe.
I mean, it did kind of feel like later 60s, early 70s, mm-hmm. when, like, a lot of this interpretive signage mm-hmm. got put in, mm-hmm. and they put in, and we're starting to see some of that down here mm-hmm. in the lunchroom.
Because mm-hmm. now it was, like, kind of backlit.
Taken the elevator down, we've gone through the airlock, mm-hmm. and here we are in the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. And, like, clearly it's good interpretive signage because it's lasted this long.
Yeah.
It's also, like, not exposed to elements in the same way that others are outside.
Exposed to different sorts of elements.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of it is illuminated from, like, inside backlit.
Mm-hmm. This is a section that has bathrooms. So it's, like, kind of the time to use the restroom, because we're going to be on the tour for 3 hours, and it's make use of your time right now. So we waited for everybody to finish up there, and then we walked only a few hundred feet along the path in the big room and made it to the access point to the lower cave tour. So the big room is kind of, we're going to have a whole episode on it later, but the big room is a big draw for the cavern. Like,
it is one of the things that people travel the world to see.
And boy, howdy.
There are two main sections of Carlsbad Caverns that people show up to see, which are the natural entrance and the big room. There are other parts of Carlsbad Cavern, but, like, if you are showing up to see what Carlsbad has to offer on the surface, you're either going to the natural entrance and or the big room.
I think you meant to say under the surface.
There we go. Under the surface. We're here in the big room, and we get to the spot where we're about to descend to go onto this lower cave tour, mm-hmm. which is a part that you can only access via a tour. You can't just go there by yourself.
Right.
Obviously, for all of these safety reasons. And we look down, and it does look like a shallow hole in the ground. And Jake said, this is where we
jump
will be.
In.
Jump in. This is where we're going.
And with that, let's take our first break.
Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Looking for some new art inspired by the national parks? Then be sure to check out our online store, The Gaze Shop.
This season, as we explore the landscapes of Olympic National Park, Mount Rainier National Park, Carlsbad Cavern National Park, and Guadalupe Mountains National Park, we've got some new items and designs coming your way.
Introducing our Olympic National Park and Mount Rainier National Park posters. These 12 by 18 posters make a great addition to any home or office, or a great gift for any lover of the national parks, even if that national parks lover is you.
Whether it's art for your wall or a sticker for your water bottle, you're sure to find something that sparks your love of the outdoors. Visit shop.gazeatthenationalparks.com to bring some of the national parks home with you. All right. Well, it feels appropriate that for this game, we're playing The Vault.
The Vault. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is our category for The Vault?
What is our category for The Vault? For those of you that have never played The Vault before with us, The Vault is a game where we pick a category and we select three things from that category to go into the vault to be saved, and everything else in that category is destroyed forever.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So it's a blast from the past, if you will.
That's right.
Saved down below so it can be opened for future generations to enjoy.
That's right. Well, now you've inspired me, and I think I want to give you
Brendan Fraser films.
Not Brendan Fraser films, but you said Alicia Silverstone. So I'm going to say, this is a big category and you can only pick three. Films from the 90s.
Oh my God.
I know. That's hard. That's really hard.
That's a real
so many good
hard
ones.
Good God.
I want to know what's right under the surface for you. I'm going to get started. Okay. All right. Films from the 90s. I just have to check and make sure this one is from the 90s. No, it's not. Aaron Brockovich was from the year 2000.
Oh.
So that is not a 90s film. So, okay, I'm gonna go in a different direction here.
Okay,
are you ready?
I am.
So these
I'm
are the films from the 90s that I'm going to save. But speaking of Alicia Silverstone, I am going to save Clueless.
Okay.
I'm going to save Clueless because of how referential it is.
Mm-hmm.
It references so many things. It paints teenagers in such a way that they're so smart, they're so autonomous, and they, you know, have like a clear sense of like sort of how they navigate the world in social circles. And maybe it's like a little bit beyond reality. And I think that's a good thing. So mm-hmm. Clueless is being saved for me.
Okay.
In addition, I'm going to say Beetlejuice.
Okay. That's not late 80s?
I don't think so. Oh, it is 88, so mm-hmm. I can't save it. Never mind.
It's hard because there's a lot of like bleed between those.
There is.
Those eras where things kind of still feel 80s, but they're not.
Okay, I'm going to save Home Alone.
Okay.
Home Alone, brilliant. If I can't save Catherine O'Hara mm-hmm. one way, I'm going to save her another way.
Okay.
So Home Alone, brilliant movie. It's so much fun and it means so much to me, mm-hmm. of course. Mm-hmm. And it's funny and it's brilliant. And so, yeah, so I'm saving that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm saving Waiting for Guffman.
Great.
Because, I mean, look at that, Catherine O'Hara and two of them. If only she were in Clueless. I think Catherine O'Hara is the theme here. Maybe that should be the category, is what three Catherine O'Hara movies are you going to save? But that for another time.
Great.
But I am saving Waiting for Guffman because what a brilliant, genius movie that is. So funny, so ridiculous. I mean, featuring so many people and just like so full of heart. Mm-hmm. So those are my three answers.
Okay. Well, this is a wide category, so I'm a little annoyed because I feel like I'm missing something, but I have my three. And they're all comedies, which makes sense for me.
So, Titanic.
Exactly. It's funny that you say Home Alone, because Home Alone 2 is the movie I'm saving.
Look at that. This is why we are friends.
Because I remember seeing that in the theater Thanksgiving one year with my mom and my cousins. Because Thanksgiving, it used to be like, go to my aunt's all day long. It's like 40 family members there. And they would send the kids to the movies with some adults. And I remember crying in the theater laughing because Home Alone 2 was so funny.
Same. My grandmother for her whole life had like a memory of me. I was sitting on her lap because somebody was sitting in front of me. I couldn't see the screen. Mm-hmm. And she was like, my legs still hurt from how hard you were laughing. Mm-hmm. When not Marv, who's the tall bandit? Harry, when he got electrocuted and that turned into a skeleton.
I think it's Marv. I think Harry is Joe Pesci.
Okay.
Yeah.
When he got electrocuted and turned into a skeleton and the skeleton was mm-hmm. screaming, I cannot. Mm-hmm. That is one of the funniest things I've mm-hmm. ever seen in my life.
Oh, it's good. It's good. All right. Movie two is one of my favorite films of all time.
Batman Returns.
No.
Which could have been in this list.
It would have been Batman Forever. Uh-huh. But it's, I mean, Val mm-hmm. Kilmer. Dead. it is Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Oh, of course.
From 1999.
Yes, yes.
That obviously. Movie was like, how is this so funny? And how don't more people know about Drop Dead Gorgeous?
I just don't know how more people don't know about this.
It is one of the funniest movies.
Period.
And I felt like as a kid seeing that, I think I saw it probably when I was like in early high school. I was like, this is so funny. Like how is this allowed? It's so funny.
I know.
Because it was mockumentary style too. So
funny.
So well done. Okay. And the last film, and I can't believe you passed over this, but it's okay. I'm saving it for the both of us, is The First Wives Club.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. The First Wives Club.
You look great. What?
You look great. Thank you. Yeah. So many times I just look at you and I just cry a little bit and go, I don't want to end up like Cynthia.
Bye-bye, love.
Hello, Pop-Tarts. You have to pay.
Exactly. That is a constant phrase.
Oh, my God. That is mm-hmm. something. Or...
a big one.
We don't really leave voicemails anymore because we just do audio messages over text message now.
Yeah.
But if we ever leave a voicemail, we're not saying anything other than, hey, Elise, it's Brenda. Annie needs a down payment on an ad agency.
Any idea where she could get that kind of cash?
That is God, what a brilliant movie.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect, exactly as is, no changes.
And that's the vault.
Okay, so you heard us geek out on 90s films. We're now back into the Lower Cave Tour mm-hmm. at Carlsbad Cavern National Park.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's talk about going into this hole. Because it was, I was like, oh, all right, well, here we go. I mean, this is what we're doing.
Well, in order to access the actual opening, you had to climb down a rope, essentially.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
There was a slope into the opening where we would start our section of ladders. And in order to go down, a gate was opened by Jake and a rope was tossed down, essentially, that had knots in it. So you could use it to basically walk yourself backwards down this hill, down the slope to we'll call it a platform, but it really wasn't, to a section that was not as sloped for us to then regroup and then continue onward.
I'm not going to lie. There was a part where I was a little, well, like researching it ahead of time. I was like, oh, okay. So there's ropes descending. It's like, okay, is this going to trigger my fear of heights? Which, for the record, I think just exposing myself more and more to things.
Exposure therapy.
really has, like, yeah. You know, allayed that a lot. This definitely did not trigger any kind of fear of heights. This is not a fear of heights situation. Mm-mm. I mean, if you don't love, like, hanging onto rope and lowering yourself down, but I'm into ropes courses. I love them. So, like, this was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that long. It's just like one rope. You got to lower yourself down a little bit and then you get to another little landing area.
Yeah.
But very quickly here in this moment, I realized this. Sometimes on tours like this, for sales purposes, they'll be like, oh, you know, they'll describe it and you got to get a hard hat on. You got to do all the mishigas involved. And then you like you walk out to just like one thing. And then that's it. And then you go back and that's the end. And right. It's like, well, otherwise, this is, you would never have been able to see it, right? This is immediately not that. No. This is like, oh, no, we're legitimately going into a full
caving experience
mm-hmm. here. And like, this is not just like for sales purposes.
Mm-hmm. So after everybody sort of gets down to the bottom of the rope, Ranger Adair shuts the gate. He's the last one down. And then Jake explains what's going to happen next, which is a series of three ladders that take us down into the lower cave. And this is probably, as far as trickiest things to do, it's all at the beginning and then at the end. But I think because you're going backwards for most of this, the beginning is trickier.
I agree.
Yeah. So the situation is thus. There are three ladders. There are platforms that lead you from the base of a ladder to the next ladder, and then eventually you're down in the cave. One person will start down the ladder. When they are at the base, they will call off the ladder, and then the next person will get on the ladder and go down backwards.
Right.
And it essentially proceeds like that down this three-tiered ladder system for about 15 minutes. There were about 12 of us on this tour, 10 to 12 people in general.
Right.
So it took us time. It wasn't more than 15. It took us a considerable amount of time, again, for safety to ensure that everyone was getting down and getting down in a safe way.
And what I appreciated was that nobody like took this as an opportunity to turn themselves into like a stand-up comedian,
right.
Like on a stage. Like, right. And that is what I've had it with, mm-hmm. right? I've had it with, okay, please say like, you have to go down the ladder, then you have to say off ladder one, then you go down the next one, off ladder two. And then when you hear and you have to wait until you hear the cue from the person before you descend. But it's like, you know, nobody was being like, oh, well, I guess I'm off ladder one. What? I'm so tired of that. It's like,
tired.
It's such terrible material. Like, mm-hmm. please don't use safety protocol as your stand-up
material.
It's not
material. Even low-hanging fruit. It's fruit on the ground and it's rotting.
It's rotted and gutted at this point. So we are down at the bottom and it is a tight little holding area. And we are at this place called the Florida Hole. And it's just like a thing he's mentioning. Like, I forget exactly why it was called that because...
It was the shape.
The shape. That's right.
Yeah.
So... We make our way forward on the tour and immediately, like everywhere, there's formations. Like very quickly, we're seeing formations. Mm-hmm. We're including popcorn, stalagmites, stalactites, drapery, columns. These are all different speleothems that you can see inside of a cave. Speleothem, of course, is the term for a cave formation.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear all about that in our trail mix about cave formations.
Mm-hmm. This was already... incredibly spectacular. Wind Cave had a lot of box work and interesting formations. Mammoth Cave is giant. And there, because we were able to go into Great Onyx Cave, which was incredible, we got some of this in Great Onyx Cave. But this was really the first time we're seeing it in mass. And it is quite simply just mind-boggling to see the amount of speleothems in such a high concentration. And this doesn't really, I mean, this is kind of the rest of the tour. Like, with the exception of we will go into some bigger spaces too, but it's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, that's why you do this. That's why you do a lower cave tour like this, because as compared to what we will experience later on the natural entrance and
big room,
the big room, these are smaller rooms, except for one. One is going to be real big here. Mm-hmm. But these are a little bit smaller, so you are a little more up close to the cave formations.
Right, right. So as we are walking, we're basically told that the entirety of this cave tour is going to be the parameters of the route are going to be marked off by tape. And that's what's going to be able to keep the outlying sections of the tour safe for the cave to continue to form and develop over time, is that there has been a path that's been designated for people to walk upon. And it's taped, which is interesting to have that, because this isn't something that we'd seen in other caves. And really, we don't see it when we're on natural entrance or the big room. This is specifically because this is a tour, and this section of the cave is only for tour purposes.
That's right. So right toward the beginning of this, right past all of the ladders and stuff, we end up in this room where there are some boardwalks. Mm-hmm. And these boardwalks are made of plastic because they can't be made of wood, because putting wood here would be introducing a new species into the environment.
Right.
So wood is an above ground species.
Organic material.
Organic material, but right. inside of the earth it is not. But there was some water around here.
Yes.
And
this
they
is
were
why
like,
the boardwalk was here.
Don't touch the water with your hands or anything like that. But inside of the water, they were studying some horsehair worms.
Which were itty bitty babies.
Tiny little baby thin worms. So we would actually come back to this section right before leaving, because we'd have to go up all those ladders again at the end.
Yeah.
But some spectacular formations here. As we move on from this section, pretty immediately we get to like this relatively tight area that we have to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
It eventually opens up a little bit more as we continue on.
Mm-hmm. And it's also something that we were told when we were on the tour, is that there would be different colors of tape. The tape on the ground was like a red or an orange. I'm pretty sure anything that was like a wall area that was taped was, because we were going to have to squeeze through some tighter areas where you would want to put your hands on something to balance you. Anything that had a tape mark, I want to say it was purple, that was purple, was like a no touch, like at all, if you're navigating through things, but everything else was sort of fair game. So we continue along this taped path, and we are passing some rather interesting column formations here. That's when a stalactite and a stalagmite join, and sometimes they are like incredibly like robust full columns, or sometimes you can sort of see where the points of each are fusing together, which is also very fascinating. Those fuller columns almost have a feel of like a flowstone, which is something we'll talk about too. That's also another speleothem to it, where it almost looks like it's frozen water that's like basically frozen in place, and there are like smaller stalagmites kind of coming down off of the smoother stone on the top edge of something. And the underhanging is, it's just interesting. It looks almost like coral.
And to be clear, these things are not forming because they're like growing independently.
No.
All of these cave formations are forming because of water that's passing mm-hmm. through limestone and then like dripping over like hundreds, thousands, millions.
Hundreds of thousands of years.
Of years.
Yeah.
And if water drips from one spot and hits the floor of the cave, you're going to get like a formation that's happening from where it's dripping, which
and building
is
up over time.
Stalactite. And then as it builds up on the floor, that's creating a stalagmite. And then like that water dripping, it's not like these two just happen to be growing into the same place.
No.
It's like,
it's the minerals building up over time.
The water that is bringing those minerals with it to form rock mm-hmm. is now having them meet.
Yeah. So after hiking for a while here, we end up coming to a much larger space. Like, this felt like Mammoth Cave. It was gigantic. Truly, especially after coming through this section of the lower cave where it was much tighter. Not as like tight the whole way through. It did become vaulted, but this opens into a massive, massive space. And there's a path that kind of cuts across it.
And there's a gigantic rock formation that we stop in front of that looks like cascading stalactites. This is known as flowstone. It does honestly look like a waterfall that's mm-hmm. been iced over.
Yep.
In this area, we take a lot of time here to just like stand in awe of mm-hmm. everything that is around us. And then Jake uses a laser pointer to point out a section above us, which is in the big room.
Right.
And there's this tiny little what looks like a balcony overlook. And that is the National Geographic Pit overlook. So like when touring the big room, you can stand there and look down into this room we're standing inside of now.
And this room is, this big space is lighted. Like there's lighting in here that is on. So like you're able, like our headlamps were good for the initial section of the cave, but this is a section and some of the other parts that we're about to travel to will have some lighting that's just there. So this is a space when you're in the big room, you can look down and actually see. And this was cool to do later, to be able to be like, oh, that's exactly where we were standing. I mean, this is incredible height.
And oh my gosh.
This was the pit overlook was essentially the space that was used for an entrance down into the lower cave when it was being essentially assessed to see what was down there. And people would rappel down and drop to the floor and then spelunk from there, essentially.
So from here, we continue on through this giant vaulted space and find ourselves heading to the left. There's still a lot of time to like look and gawk at everything. We say gawk, but we mean to really sort of respectfully take in everything because there's so many wild and intricate cave formations happening on every side at all times. Mm-hmm. And even though we were in the big space, which is largely free of debris and large rocks on the floor, we're still following taped paths.
Right. We pass by some stalactites that look like drapery. So drapery, it almost looks like thin sheets that are like wavy. If you just think of like a curtain almost. But these stalactites kind of felt like they were stalactites, but also had that sort of drapery feel in parts of it. So we pass through these and continue to wind ourselves along the path of the cave. And we enter into some even better lighted areas from floor lighting that's set up. So we'll talk more about this, but cave lighting, y'all.
Cave lighting, it's serious stuff.
People with, you know, lighting degrees should go and look at caves and how they're lit because,
wow,
beautiful. Yeah.
So Jake begins to lead us to one of the more impressive features of this lower cave tour. As we wind our way along the tape path, we find ourselves in like smoother, wider formations, which are very different than anything we've seen before.
And with that, let's take our next break.
Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah with over 10 episodes across two separate seasons? It would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails! Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage
Curiosa, inspired by, what was that show? What was that movie?
Mad Max. Yeah, inspired by
Mad Maxtress. Mad Maxine, but I think Maxtress is better. Okay, so Curiosa.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think, okay, I'm going on a whim here. Okay. I think Curiosa is actually like, it's one character, but it is like one drag character, but it's played by multiple people. So that in the show, Curiosa's on stage and then they're behind you and then they're over there mm-hmm. and then they're over there. And Got it's it. Just like multiple humans mm-hmm. playing the one character only one at a time. Mm-hmm. So it looks like Curiosa can be anywhere at any moment.
Great. I already have her song.
What's that?
It's Abracadabra by Lady
Gaga. Oh, it totally is, without a doubt.
Uh-huh.
And magic tricks and, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like there's got to be some like...
There's a learning element, though. Because she's curious.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say maybe it's like a... Like she's leaning into gossip or something. Like, oh. I'm like, maybe she's been... They've been out in the audience, like...
Oh,
beforehand, secrets. Hearing everybody's conversations mm-hmm. and then incorporating it into the show.
Ah.
Like suddenly you hear parts of your They're conversation.
Plants in the audience.
Right.
Interesting.
Because it's like, whoops, did you think your little secrets would be spilt mm-hmm. on stage tonight?
Mm-mm.
Well, Curiosa will do it for you. That's mm-hmm. right. I think that Curiosa has a brand of tea. That is her merch.
Okay.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah, Curiosa for the morning, Curiosa for the evening.
Curiosa at supper time.
If Curiosa's in your teacup, you can be curious anytime. There you go. There you go. Everybody, you know where to find us.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Curiosa.
All right, so we are continuing on the Lower Cave tour with our caver guide Jake and Adair, who is in the back end of the tour
mm-hmm.
and
who is in the rear.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So he gathers us into the small alcove, which takes us to the Colonel Bowles formation. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called.
And this feels like a very reverent space, and it almost feels like a small asp in a church. The area is gleamingly white, and in the center there is a column that looks like it is more newly formed than some of the other columns we've seen, and the center is tapered from each end, so this looks like the stalagmite and stalactite hadn't joined all that, you know, far back. Well, but by that I mean it could have been like 10,000 years ago as opposed to like 50. It's actually two columns that are adjoined to one another and have sort of a and sort of have bled into each other. So it's two sets of stalactites, two sets of stalagmites. And the walls around this section feel like they are glowing from the white light that's being cast from our headlamps. And there's lots of small stalactites that drape down from the ceiling here.
So Bowles is the name of a person. They were the superintendent of Carlsbad and was the shameless promoter of the site, which is what drove public interest. The column was the highlight of his VIP tour within the cave. So clearly this was the old VIP tour.
Mm-hmm.
The calcite is totally otherworldly, gorgeous. There's so much dimension. And it's also like there's a lot of eeriness considering how gleamingly white mm-hmm. it is. As we circle around the column, there are signatures on the calcite, which were from almost 100 years ago.
Now they are, because they were from 1925.
There we go.
And we were there in 2024.
So we saw this in Mammoth Cave with soot writing in the ceiling of the caves, and this felt like a little more brazen, considering how like permanent and unnatural it is, or it felt, as compared to the soot. And then there's like a pretty significant crack through the column, and apparently Bowles used to remove this section when giving the tours.
I guess when you're the king, you can do whatever you want, right?
He would remove the crack.
He would remove like the section that was cracked of apparently of the stalagmite. Like it was, oh. It was like removable because it had that crack through it. And then he'd put it back. Not great.
Not great.
Not great stewardship there.
No.
No. Mm-mm. Walking around the base, there are some smaller stalagmites that are starting to form as well. So it's clear that this is a formation that will continue to change over thousands of years. Obviously, we won't see what that change looks like in our lifetimes, but it gives some perspective as far as like geological time for things and just how intricate this cave system is and how long it took for the cave to develop. So we spend a little bit more time here, and then we have to decide how we want to head back. So there are two options. There's going back the way that we came, and then there's taking a much snugger pathway back toward our starting point near where we crossed the boardwalk.
So all of us were like, yeah, we're game for something different. So we take the narrower route. And we backtrack a little bit on the path that brought us to Bowles Formation. And then it brings us past this like other very ghostly large column that is more embedded in the wall. After we get back to where we turned off for the Bowles Formation, we make a left and walk through more of an open chamber. But this openness of this chamber is very short-lived mm-hmm. because it begins to get much, much tighter. This is the scrambling I was talking about. Mm. Like, this was where it was like, oh, this is why you wear a hard hat.
Yeah.
Because I definitely hit my head a few times.
Yeah.
Not in a violent way, but just in like a, you know, in like
accidental way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, well, that's what happens. Yeah. Like, you might bump
you
your
might
head.
You might bonk your head. Yep.
And if I didn't have a hard hat on, then that, you know, like a piece of cave rock could like jab itself into my skin, and mm-hmm. I don't want that.
No, nobody wants that. This becomes a tighter space. If you remember from our tour of Mammoth Cave, there's a section that's called the Tall Man's Misery and the Fat Man's Misery.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, not great, but this is sections that it is much tighter. This is also where we're encountering tape on formations where it's like, don't touch that, but you could touch elsewhere if you needed to for balance. The only difference here is that these areas are lined with these incredible formations, and they're basically narrow passageways of gypsum flowers and frostwork. And this
and
is
look at us complain.
Yeah, no, it's the most spectacular, weird kind of, again, feels like this was a coral reef that you're just walking through.
And if you only go to Carlsbad Cavern to do the natural entrance and
the big room,
you are not getting any kind of tight experiences.
No.
So this was really special to be able to do this, and also to be this close to all the frostwork mm-hmm. and all of this these gypsum flowers, because it did really feel like a coral reef.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is so intricate. It's gorgeous as we're making our way. And it also kind of feels like the Gnome King's realm from mm-hmm.
Return to Oz.
From Return to Oz, which
Don't
is an 80s film.
That eggs are poison.
That's right.
Poison.
Cavernous, poison but like gnomes. Swiss cheese and full of secrets. Mm-hmm. Correct. And then there are some incredibly narrow sections that we do have to navigate through without touching anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, don't touch anything. Like, there are some handholds and some areas that we can grab onto. But this was pretty wild. And this section was like, you know, this was work to
yeah.
have to navigate through it.
Absolutely.
When I finished it, I was like, that was...
What was hard?
That was hard.
Yeah.
That was, I mean... Not like in a like deeply strenuous way,
no.
But in like a thank God I had boots on.
Yeah.
Thank God I've scrambled before.
Yeah.
Thank God I'm familiar with how
yep.
this goes,
yep.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Eventually we do get into a wider space, and we do have to climb up and over and down into another larger space. And once we have all gathered here, we find ourselves a space where we can sit. This is a part of a cave tour, which is always kind of interesting. And that
it
is
on every cave tour.
I think every cave tour we've been on. Feeling what true dark feels like. And so Jake's like, we're all going to sit for a minute. I want you to make sure any devices you have in your pocket are like in your pocket and off. Like cover if you have a watch, any sort of little indicator lights that there's power to anything. Everything should be like covered or off or tucked away. And one by one, we are all going to turn off our lamps or headlamps and sit in the dark. And it is always fascinating because you cannot see anything. A lot of the times on tours like this, they'll be like, okay, close your eyes and see what dark feels like with your eyes closed. Okay, now open your eyes. Okay, now close your eyes again, and then we're going to turn the lights off and then open your eyes. And it's a little unnerving, but it's also kind of cool to have that experience in a cave where you just, there's no natural light whatsoever.
Right. I do remember here at this moment, there was a gentleman
from Australia.
From Australia. Mm-hmm. I've had it with us for the record. Jake, I think, asked if there were any questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he totally monopolized this entire tour to just be about his questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, girl, no one cares. He was taught, like, it was like, oh, we were recently in a cave like this in Australia. Is it like this? And he was like, well, I don't know. I've never been to the caves in Australia. And then it was like, well, let me tell you a 3-hour narrative about it. And like everybody in the tour like turned on this gentleman.
And we left him there.
I turned on him. I just was like, I'm done. I am done. I'm done with you seeking attention for your experiences. I'm out of it. I'm out. So moving on, we moved on. I had to move on. So
move on.
That's right.
So after we are in the dark for a little bit and have turned our headlamps on, we continue the trek. And this is not as long of a return in distance, but it does take time for the group to make their way into the different chambers. So it's slow going because this is, again, tighter spaces. As we're walking along, Jake asks us about bats in the cave and if we've seen any yet. And then he tells us that you most likely won't, as it's a little too early in the season, because we were in Carlsbad in late March of 2024. So he's like, it's a little too early for the bats to be out. They're still hibernating, most likely. But as we continue to plod along, he tells us to keep our eyes peeled because there's a possibility that we might see a bat.
And after walking a little further, we pass an incredibly small bat that has essentially been mummified into the cave wall. Mm-hmm. This was a very kind of cool thing to see. Mm-hmm. Jake tells us that bats aren't usually found this deep in the cave in general. That's true because they like to be near the surface.
Right.
But this bat clearly found its way here and also to his final rest.
Yeah.
So we continue. There's more gypsum along the way, beautiful formations along the way, and eventually we make it back to the ladders and repeat our process going up. Once we make it up to the pit level where we started to with the rope, we each take the turn on the rope to haul ourselves up onto the what is the path that leads around the big room.
Once our group's assembled, we make our way back to the elevator shaft and we wait so we can go up as a group. And at this point, this part of the cave is much more active because it's later in the day. And so people had either taken the elevator down to start exploring the big room or had started to walk down the natural entrance. We make our way back up. We cross the decontamination pads and back to Theater 2 where we started. And we have a little bit of time here to debrief as we take off our gear. Our gloves get returned. Our hard hats get returned. And after that, Jake sends us on our way.
And from here, we depart our group to continue exploring Carlsbad Cavern. All right, it's time for the Karen Stone Scale. Let's put the Lower Cave Tour on the Karen Stone Scale.
I'm going to say a 5.
I was going to say a 6 for all the stuff we had to do at the end. Mm-hmm. A 6. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the most strenuous.
But it would be, it's not accessible for everybody.
Windy. It's definitely not. And
especially if you're claustrophobic, not for you.
No. And also
heights, not for you.
If you have never scrambled before, I probably wouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't like having only one foot on the ground at the time, mm-hmm. probably not for you.
Yep.
So 11 out of 20 Karen Stones.
And now let's end this episode like we end all of our episodes with some Jeopardy style trivia.
Why don't you get us started with your Jeopardy today, Mike?
Great. My Jeopardy for today is called Chutes and Ladders. So in Great. This Jeopardy, you're going to need to name the game, the toy, the thing that deals with either a chute or a ladder.
Shoot. Sounds great.
Great. For 100, this common standalone playground equipment for children in the 70s, 80s, and 90s involved both a chute and a ladder and could be incredibly hot to the touch if it was a bright, sunny day.
Oh, what is the jungle gym? What is the...
Looking for the singular thing.
Oh, the singular thing.
Usually it stood by itself. Now it's connected to...
What is the slide?
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that hot
the metal?
Metal
slide?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was we were built differently in the 80s and 90s.
No
We
kidding.
Had cushion. They're
That's
like,
right.
Maybe you'll die on this slide.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
I was on that slide in Mississippi Heat, still did it.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. right.
You have the scorch marks to prove it.
That's right.
For 200, this classic arcade game had Mario trying to rescue the princess after climbing a series of ladders up to girder platforms and avoiding obstacles mostly barrels thrown by the game's namesake.
What is Donkey Kong?
Correct. For 300, this lawn game, whose name feels nothing like that played on a green with sand traps and water features, includes standing game pieces the opposing team is trying to get a set of rope-connected balls to hang on by tossing, has a similar feel, though different structure, to Can Jam and Cornhole.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, can you
it
get the first
like
part
golf.
Of it? Okay, yep.
Disc golf?
So what is the name of the category?
Shoot golf. What is ladder golf?
There you go.
Oh, okay, great. What is shoot golf?
I was
golf.
Like, you had a 50-50 shoot. Chance there. And right. You blew it. Okay. For 400, this summertime lawn experience, though not vertical in nature, involves water and barreling down a piece of plastic sheeting in your bathing suit and trying not to break a leg.
What is the slip and slide?
That's right. Mm-hmm. What you also might do at a food store to sue and then make money.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. In your short griff.
Sue and then make money.
And for 500.
Welcome to the stage, Sue Ann.
Make money.
Then make money.
No, I think Sue Ann make money. Is,
yeah, I think
make
that's
money
that.
Is her last
make
name.
Make money is her last mm-hmm. name.
And for 500, these giant slides, usually made of metal and appearing at fairs and carnivals, had an undulating descent that you would ride on in one of these items typically used to hold spuds.
What is a potato sack?
That's correct. And that's chutes and ladders.
Great. All right. I was inspired by hard hats for my category.
Great.
So this is called Hard Hats and Other Alliterative Fashion Items.
Great. I love it.
Okay. So for 100, this item might be worn to the beach or to the shower at the gym. And it's a term also used to describe a politician that can't stay on one side of an issue.
What is a flip-flopper?
That's right. Or a flip-flop. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. So you get it. All
I
of
do.
These fashion
I was
items
almost
are alliterative.
Swimsuit, because you would maybe wear both of those things.
You would but, also. Yeah. But we're not going to say that about a politician mm-hmm. necessarily. But here we go for 200. This item is worn often in the summer, mostly by gay men, but also by many others, and it can be described as a shirt that is sleeveless. It could also be described as a shirt featuring a graphic of an army vehicle.
Right, and we're both wearing one right now.
We are.
What is a tank top?
That is correct.
Because mm-hmm, we're gay and it's the summer.
And it's the summer. Almost. Well, almost. For 300, these items are often worn to make someone taller, elongate the leg, and to point the toe due to the lifted feature in the back. They could also describe the euphoric sensation felt by a dog when told to stay.
What is high heels?
That's right.
I love that descriptor there.
Thank
the
you.
The euphoric sensation felt by a dog when being told to stay. Tell me to stay, Daddy.
A high heel, right. For 400. Mm-hmm. For reasons I'll never know, this style of trouser was in long ago and now is back. It features a sewn-in fold at the waist on the trouser to help define a line and perhaps add more fabric to the leg. While everyone should wear what they want, you will never see me in these.
Sewn-in fold? Oh, what is a, I don't know, what's Junko jeans?
Incorrect. It is not Junko jeans. What is a pleated pant?
Oh, a pleated pant.
Correct. And for 500, instead, you will note that all of my trousers are this other alliterative term for a trouser that has no pleat, creates a more uniform look, and adds simplicity to a complicated waist.
What's a boot cut?
Not a boot.
I know it's alliterative, but I was going.
do not insult me in that way.
That's
that
what
I
was
ever
doing.
Wear boot
That's
cuts.
What I was doing. Slim fit.
No, that's also not a.
Oh, no. I was trying to like remember the clue. It was more accentuating to
it's
the
a
waist.
Trouser with no pleat.
What's a flat front?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Ta-da. There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. And that is hard hats and other alliterative fashion items.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.